You are listening to the INCJ podcast, conversations about international criminal justice. Hello, everybody. Can I welcome you to an INCJ forum event? It's called Perspectives on the Role of Punishment, and it's a follow-up to the webinar we ran exactly 2 weeks ago. Thank you very much for joining us. We're expecting around 40 people to come. Now, not everybody that signs up is able to make it. So if you couldn't attend live, we will be recording this and sending it out as both a podcast and a YouTube. So please feel free to attend later if you're too busy. Our aim is to allow an open exchange and international perspectives on the subject of punishment. And I guess it's really important that you find out right from the beginning how we're going to attempt to do this. Well, we're going to divide the session into different stages. And to start, if all 46 people turned up, there's going to be very little space in an hour for 46 people to say anything. So the plan is that we'll divide up into breakout rooms and ask each of the breakout rooms to take on a specific topic. And I'll say what those are going to be in a few moments. And we'll give a quarter of an hour to each of the breakout rooms to exchange points. And hopefully, if you could decide on three top points that you would like to feed back into the whole forum, after a quarter of an hour or so, we'll give you an alert and then bring everybody back together so that the whole group, if it's 20 or 30 people, will be able to hear the separate points from each of the breakout rooms. So we'll listen to the group's feedback. Now, the plan would then be for us as a larger forum to reflect and see if there are any themes emerging. Because if you remember, our hope is that we can get international perspectives on the role of punishment. And particularly as we had contributors at the original webinar from both North America and different parts of Europe, we would be really keen to keep that theme going so we can be cross-cultural as well as cross-disciplinary. What are the themes that we would like to look at in the small groups? And we'll decide how many small groups that we're going to have when Rob can say at the end of maybe the next couple of minutes exactly how many people we have joining us this afternoon. But the suggestion is that we have one group that would look at the role of emotion in punishment, a second that would look at the impact that politics has in the way that different cultures punish, what role the media and social media has in punishment. Another question we would like to consider is, does the evidence about what works impact on punishment and punishment decision? And then maybe a group would like to look at the role of philosophy in punishment. So those were the five themes that if we had enough people to make up the groups, that we would like to split off and consider. Now, rather than spend the next hour deciding which small group you're going to go into, we thought the best thing to do was to randomly allocate people and then see how that ended up. And I think we've had a run of new people join. So can I ask Rob to let us know how many people have joined and how many people we have at the moment in the forum?
We have 16 online at the moment. Okay. Maybe a few more might drop in, but I can allocate them to groups as we go along.
So what I'm going to suggest is that we go into four groups, not five, because I think four people in a subgroup is enough. Does everyone think that's okay? Could you just give me a thumbs up if you think that's okay? Okay, thank you. So four thumbs go up, so that was encouragement. And so what I suggest is that we look at the first group, Rob, and if you could allocate four people to look at the role of emotion in punishment. And if the second group could look at what impact politics has in punishment in a particular culture. And the third group, the role of media and social media in punishment. And the fourth, does evidence of what works impact on punishment? So if we just use those four topics, and I'm hoping that Rob, through some sort of wizardry, can get us ending up in different breakout groups that we'll know what question we're considering. And then after a quarter of an hour, you'll get a warning that we're going to come back into the forum and we'll hear feedback from the different groups. Now, one point to make is that we're not going to record the breakout rooms, okay? So what you say in the breakout rooms is up to you, but if you could make sure that somebody is equipped or delegated to identify the highlight points so that you can feed that back into the main forum. Now, does anybody have any questions or want me to be clear about what we're going to attempt in this next stage of the forum? Everyone okay about that? I'm getting three thumbs up. Any questions people want to send to me? In that case, Rob, we're going to rely on you now with your wizardry to bounce us out into breakout groups. And I'm hoping, first of all, that everybody arrives in a group that they have something to say. And also that when we come back, we're all going to be bursting to say something in the main forum. So thanks for coming and enjoy your next group.
I've put the numbers in the chat, just to the group. So just take a note of the number that you're in, and then I'll add them afterwards as well. I'll go back in and verify which group you're in. So number one is emotion, number two is politics, number three is media, and number four is what works. So I've no idea which group you're going to end up in. So I'll click that button now and allocate you to all of the rooms.
As some people are rejoining the forum, feel free to switch your cameras on, because that way we'll have more of a feel of the whole group. I'm hoping everybody had a useful and lively set of exchanges in the smaller group. I was in the group talking about the media and social media. So we were talking about print, we were talking about television, social media, and true crime. We covered loads in our quarter an hour. So thank you very much, those that participated. What I'd like to do is ask, have we got someone going to give us the main points from the role of emotion in punishment? Is someone going to talk about that for us?
Jeremy was an interesting character. He delivered some interesting points, if I may recommend him.
Jeremy, some have greatness thrust upon them.
Okay.
Thank you.
This may not be developing, paying the slightest attention to what anybody said, but one of the essentials in this is that the system is... the justice system is humans operating on humans, some of whom have committed offences against humans. And there's a shading of, emotion is a terribly single word for me, all sorts of things, but in my book, it does shade into public interest as to what society thinks is important and what society thinks is not important is a fairly subjective aspect, and you see occasional legislative changes and changes in sentence guidelines, which are obviously probably make more difference in legislation, actually, as to say, well, this is something which should be punished more harshly than it used to be, or less harshly than it used to be. Reclassification of drugs just occasionally, things like that. I mean, they are expressions of what's important, and that's part of the emotional process. The other thing which I think we were highlighting in various ways was the risk of politicians trying to make cheap points at usually at the public's expense, and somewhat headline grabbing, somewhat easy target for such people. Criminal justice tends to be what happens to other people rather than to all of us. And that's evidenced not only by the way in which politicians will speak about offenders, but also the way in which politicians will seek to avoid being nicked themselves. And it's not just the COVID fines, it's also who was the driver of that car, Mr. So-and-so, etc. That's because suddenly the buck is on them and they don't like it. And they realize actually all of those fears that the general public will have about these things, are suddenly they've got that feeling of, oh, but I wish I wasn't here after all. And there's, in a sense, there's no getting away. However systematic we all try to be, there is ultimately going to be a degree of humanity and flexibility. And British legislation actually speaks to that, because you hardly ever have a minimum sentence that is rigid. It's always a get-out clause. And those who pass sentence will not just say, well, you committed offence of ABH, the fact of penalty for that is X. There's always going to be sentencing comments which highlight certain things, which might or might not be what we agree with, but nevertheless, they show an approach to a situation that involves looking at the facts and not just at the rule book. So I don't think anyone else agreed with said any of that, but that's what I would say.
Right. Important reflections. Thank you. Would anybody else from the group that discussed the role of emotion in punishment like to add something to what Jeremy said?
If I could.
Please do.
Thanks. Picking up on something that John just said, it's interesting to note just how quickly certain criminal offences can become non-criminal offences. And I'm thinking in particular of Alan Turing and Oscar Wilde and their convictions under what is now repealed legislation. So there is a bit of a meme pooling going on to some extent. And with the shifting changes in the sand, I think it's, the only way I can think of is fluid. It's fluid to the extreme. We attach so much importance to them today, that as in 30, 50 years' time, we'd be looking back thinking, my God, what were we doing?
Yeah, so the social context can change as much as the emotional context. I think that's a powerful point.
I think they're very much intertwined, yeah. Yeah. One driving the other. Yeah, thanks, John.
Okay. Anybody else want to add? Because I'm going to keep us moving. Shall we go on to group two then? Thank you, both Leanne and Jeremy. That's great. This could be a hot question about the impact politics having. I think that was the second group. Is someone going to start the feedback on your main points?
Yeah, I'm happy to.
Thank you, Ruwani.
Ruwani, that's
right. Ruwani, thank you.
So we started talking about how politicians tend to be incentivized by getting reelected, and in general, public popularity, which kind of goes against so they're not incentivized to enact long-term changes. And in particular, when the public's opinion and preferences tend to be more on the punitive side, sort of retribution rather than rehabilitation. I don't know whether anything more recently has been done on public sort of opinions on rehabilitation of offenders, of people who have gone through the criminal justice system. But as I understand, in Britain at least, it's quite punitive. And we were talking as well about how the role of the media may intertwine with that, and sort of which way it goes, how it all interacts with politicians' incentives to act in a certain way or another. And there was a very good point that was made on how politicians should work to rehabilitate society in our shared representations of people with convictions, of offending and of rehabilitation in general. So that's, in a nutshell, what was said.
Thank you. Sounds lively. Would anybody else from that group like to add to what Ruwani has said?
Yeah, what Ruwani said was actually what went on within the room of the conversation. I just want to add that, politics influence punishment or criminal justice in general. And most often, politicians do not want to show themselves as somebody, as people who are lenient or who are soft on crime. So they always say they want to be tough on crime to bind the mindset of the generality of the people, so to say. But from research, it shows clearly that victims are not vindictive or vengeful the way the politicians want us to live.
Yeah.
And to some extent in my country, some victims will even say that politicians should stop thinking for them. Because what they want is, they don't want what has happened to them, the victims, I'm saying. They don't want what happened to them to repeat itself or to reoccur. And that does not mean punishment in most of the cases. But what makes the offender to commit crime in the first place? Can that be dealt with so that the offender will not return to life of crime again? That's exactly what victims want. But unfortunately, most often, victims are used as a political tool when politicians want to campaign, you know, and it's unfortunate, really.
That's a powerful point. So that victims are used by politicians all over the world, Don John, for their own ends and not necessarily honestly. So thank you. That's a strong Nigerian perspective there. Anybody else want to come in at that point? Because we're keeping the subject moving, so thank you. Okay, right. So the next topic is the role of media and social media in punishment. And I think Rachel Warner, are you there, Rachel?
Do you mean, are you talking about me?
Yes, is that Rachel Warner?
No, I'm Rachel Heidorf.
Oh, no, there was a Rachel Warner in the breakout group. Hello, Rachel.
Heidorf. Okay, sorry, I just wanted to double check to make sure.
That's fine. hello, Rachel Heidorf. Lovely to say hi. But there's Daniel, are you still listening?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Yeah. Daniel, we've lost Rachel, and I'm just wondering if you are able to give some summary points from the media and social media in punishment group.
Yeah, I didn't take any notes, but we did have a wide-ranging discussion, didn't we, about the impact of the media uncovering crimes, the number of drama Law and Order programs on television. To what extent did they touch on the perpetrator, or were they really just whodunit, and a regional perspective on the UK and the detectives' family issues. We also touched on true crime. We touched on really through Rachel's interventions about social media and how people were using that to reinforce their probably already existing views. But and John, you made a point, an incredibly harsh environment for everybody, particularly for females, particularly for females of colour, trying to survive in the social media set up, and to say anything controversial, then they get tremendous abuse for it. So I think we covered a lot of very interesting ground without coming to any conclusions, shall we say?
Yeah. We picked up one or two issues that, in a way, Jeremy earlier touched on about attention in the media being on both the crime and the person, and how certain parts of the media want to sell newspapers or get lots of attention. And if the aim was to increase understanding of a situation or a problem, or understanding about the motivation of an offender, that was a good thing. And yet very rarely was the context available in any discussion on social media, where on the whole, social media lacks an editorial function and ramps up the horror rather than increases understanding. And at least if you disagree with a newspaper, there's an editorial choice often being made, which you can assess and evaluate. So we looked at whether media was increasing understanding or just increasing the gulf between people and increasing the vitriol that was around about punishment or victim issues. I think we did look at specific cases, and we felt that the media often escalates fear, and in some ways understandably, but often the context of fiction was that it emphasized violence against women and perhaps created an artificial level of fear in our communities about crime. But that was the sort of discussion that we had, and how that might influence punishment decisions. Okay. I don't know whether we had both Bran and Rachel within our group, but it looks like they're not able to comment. So shall we go on to the fourth group, which was, does evidence of what works impact on punishment? Who would like to contribute on this?
I volunteered to speak on behalf of that group, if that's okay, John.
Fabulous. Good to hear from you, Rob.
Yeah. Well, as Jeremy warned us when he was giving feedback, he's not really sure that I'd be speaking on behalf of anybody else, but I'll do my best. If you think about talking about what works, then probably the first question is what are you trying to achieve in the first place? So if you're trying to bring it about that individuals offend, you know, specific individuals have been convicted, offend less in the future, that implies maybe one kind of approach, and would lead you to talk about things like offending behavior programs or whatever, or desistance strategies. But that's by no means the only thing that a criminal justice system might attempt to do. It might also aspire to reduce crime overall, and that might be a very different proposition, because after all, a very large number of people who commit crimes are never brought to justice at all. So offending behavior programs are to that extent completely irrelevant for them. But then there's the third, and at least one other consideration, and that's the idea of peace building or restorative or reparative approaches, which again implies yet another approach. And as Don John has just now reminded us, it's not the case that victims are calling out for harsh punishments. So we need to think differently about what would best vindicate and honour the experiences that they've undergone. So who's going to decide what the problem is in the first place, and who's going to determine what crime problems we're trying to address? We spoke a lot about corruption at all levels and considerable anxiety about who is the honest broker in trying to manage all that. And another strong theme that was coming out in our debates was about how so many crime problems are international. And therefore, it's very difficult to know who has the authority and whether countries can cooperate sufficiently to get their heads together to approach particular matters. So we spoke about human trafficking. We spoke about money laundering. It doesn't matter what any individual jurisdiction tries to do about that. It will be incomplete without regard to that international, potentially global context. So what counts as evidence, what we're trying to achieve in the first place, who decides what counts as evidence and who decides on the priorities, all of that, I think, is insufficiently discussed in a lot of the debates about the role of effectiveness. So I'm very keen to for Amy and Rachel and Felicia to add to this, because I've given what I took from that discussion, but I'm sure they will have taken other things besides. But those were my thoughts.
Anybody like to add from the group that was the fourth group on evidence? Felicia has another contributor joining us, which is fantastic. I hope he has lots to say.
Yeah, I'm fine. I think you summed up perfectly, Rob. Thank you.
The man's a genius, Felicia. Hi. Any additional points? Because so often decisions are not made in the context of hard evidence, but maybe people are driven by what went before, by what they think the public want, rather than what is actually researched evidenced. Okay.
I find it actually based on tradition. And like ineffective or effective doesn't matter. That's how it's been done. Let's carry on like that. It's like a very blindfolded kind of approach, I find.
Right. And tradition, a certain number of hours for community punishments or a certain number of months to match particular custodial sentences. And so they get built into a system rather than necessarily matched against effectiveness or effective outcomes. I get it. I don't like it, but I get it.
No, okay. No, I was meaning different. Sorry, I meant only the tradition of that we imagine that a harsh punishment will be a cure.
Oh, I see.
You know, it's like this idea that, you know, let's punish harsh, whatever. That is going to be punishment is a cure, which is obviously not. It's been shown more again and again.
What? Okay, forgive me. Thank you for expressing it directly. That's always better in your words, Felicia. Thank you. Well, we've had a chance to hear from the four groups, and the advantage of that is that we've had a lot more airtime, if that's the right word, on different perspectives. So thank you very much. And we've now got maybe 10 minutes or so to see if there are any themes that have emerged. And so would anyone like to reflect on the different ideas that have been bouncing around? And would maybe someone who hasn't spoken yet like to reflect on what they've heard in this forum so far?
I think my general would be that it is very difficult to remove or to
Don John, you're echoing a great deal. Could you speak slower and maybe we will hear you better? Can you try again? That'd be great.
Okay. I was... Hello, can you hear me now?
Yeah, perfect. Thank you.
So I was saying that it would be very difficult to de-emphasize punishment from in within the criminal justice system because it has come to stay for years now, and politicians cannot do their business by de-emphasizing punishment in criminal justice system, because it is punishment is something that politicians use in gaining support when they want to do their politicking. So perhaps if we are able to depoliticize punishment, if we're able to depoliticize punishment or remove punishment from politics, then we may move forward. But I think that is a very, very difficult thing to do.
Yes. Can we have reflections from other countries? Has any country managed to separate politics from punishment? Question mark.
I mean, there was a time when, in England and Wales, when it wasn't particularly political, there was a cross-party consensus about punishment, and it was probably in the Margaret Thatcher years and then the John Major years that they discovered that it was a rich battleground for politics. And once you have gone down that way, you're never going to be able to row it back. And Professor Ian Loder has spoken about the Platonic guardians, as he called them, the Platonic guardians, the wise and good people who would tell you the answers, and then the public would just nod politely and not worry about it. Those days are past. And I think the group who spoke about emotions would probably have some comments to make about the impossibility of returning. So I'm not sure. I think some countries are more overtly party political than others. But once you start going down there, you've had it really. You're never going to be able to get it back. Maybe okay. You shouldn't. Maybe you shouldn't.
Yeah. Any other comments about the role of politics in punishment?
I do. Here in the United States, we have lots of laws that protect victims of crimes. We have lots of laws that protect public officials. I seem to have noticed that there's so much corruption within each department that even if we international laws and strictness were occurring, there's still no justice being brought, and the systems are consistently being changed on a one-to-one basis. That sounds terrible to say, but there's so much. We look at political campaigns, even, you know, there's that public policy for doing the right thing and having that public eye, but we're doing something else in the background. Same as what I noticed in a lot of our officials. And when that happens, everything's undermined. You even, especially when it comes to public officials being brought to sessions, they are not even coming close to even being charged with the crimes that they should be being charged with. They're getting lighter sentencing, specialized sentencings, because they had a particular political past. But politicians will stick together because they did that one favor when they really needed it to keep that public image and, you know, to hide the general crimes that they've committed. So, you know, and it could have been taking bribes. It could have been even something down to having officials make sure that a problem doesn't ever pop up or surface, changing records. I mean, it happens in every country, but that seems to be something that, though we have laws, somehow there are so many loopholes. So sometimes I think the United States law protects the offender as well as the one offended. So sometimes it's kind of like a catch-22. We see a lot of judges, even domestic violence cases, that will sometimes, you know, take a charge of a lesser degree, and that, you know, sometimes the victim is really happy with something down the road because they just want to get it done over with, but that person goes out to another county or another state, another country, and continues to carry on with whatever crime, whether it be money laundering, it could be trafficking, it could be, you know, transporting of goods, it could be so many things. But there seems to be a little bit of, our laws aren't written strict enough, so it allows loopholes on people to escape things. And I think that sometimes a couple different places have that same law where people are able to use it, the criminals are able to use it to their advantage. The United States has come a long way. I think we're an amazing country. I love being an American, by the way. I do. But no country is perfect either, and that's why we're all here, just to make things a little bit easier for everybody, right?
Well, certainly corruption undermines confidence in justice. And I agree with you. If you look at almost every country that are represented here, we probably all have real concerns. This week in the United Kingdom, for example, there's huge concerns about corruption in our main police force, in the Metropolitan Police in London. And we're really appalled about the culture that's been allowed to grow up there. So your point about justice being undermined by corrupt figures, whether they be politicians or working within justice institutions, is very upsetting. Okay, well, we're coming to the end of our hour. And one of the things that we promise people when they join us is that we're only going to steal an hour of your time. And we're coming up to the end point. I am going to just look out to the forum to see if anybody would like a last word. So does anybody, I see Jeremy's got his hand raised and so Lee. So how about we ask Jeremy and Lee to see if they would like a last word. I'll ask Felicia if her son wants to say anything before he goes as well. Okay, Jeremy first, then Lee.
Well, I've recently retired from being a defence solicitor for some years. So one of the things I would quite used to have some interest is in when someone has been through the system and the penny is dropped or whatever's happened, that their lives have fallen into place, they're no longer going through the courts. What sort of human being has resulted from that? Because actually, in my book, politicians should hold a party every time someone completes an unpaid work order without mishap. That's a success. That's a system actually working. For many people, that's a failure, but it's a big mistake. And one other thing, purely personal, but it's nice to see Professor Canton on this broadcast. We have not clapped eyes on each other since we were fellow students some 45 years ago. So it's a great pleasure to make his acquaintance on this occasion.
Right. So friendship across the decades there. Lee, do you have any friendships across the decades to mention?
I'm sure I could find one or two if I tried hard enough. Can I just quickly say, it's arguable that society is being kind of boulder googly, if you like, in the sense that targeting offenders and focusing on victims is leaving out or leaving untouched the causes of crime, which are discrimination, inequality, poverty. Jeremy and I discussed this on the group. So while you've got the likes of Tony Blair banging on about being tough on crime and tough on the causes of crime and locking people up for longer and longer periods of time, society is not improving. The same problems are going untouched from one generation to the next, and arguably getting worse.
Well, that context about punishment is perhaps a good note to end on. My perception, Lee, is that nobody ever got tough on the causes of crime. They just got tougher. They got tougher on offenders. So thank you very much for joining us. And if you want to follow this series, can I entice you to come back probably in about a term's time, because Western Sydney University in Australia has offered to do another seminar on the theme of punishment, but starting from an Australian perspective. Because if you think about it, their whole state had its origins as a place to send people to for punishment. And they have some very interesting perspectives and have offered to host a seminar for INCJ using that perspective as a starting point, perhaps very different to what we've discussed today. So keep an eye on our adverts and join us sometime in the future. Also, if you want to follow us on Twitter, we're available at INTCJ Network. And we have other podcasts on the website, which you'll be very welcome to have a look at. That's at criminaljusticenetwork.net. So thank you very much for joining us. It's great that because this is a forum, there's no specific person to thank, just all of you. So keep safe. Please join us on another occasion. And on that note, I shall say goodbye and see you again. Cheerio.
You have been listening to the INCJ podcast. conversations about international criminal justice. To find out more, go to our website at criminaljusticenetwork.net or follow us on Twitter at INTCJ Network.